Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 154. This is Kevin DeFrango. Sitting beside me is Ken Phillips. What's up, good sir?
Hey, man. We're back at it again.
We're back at it again.
Over with the professional microphone here. So that's exciting. It's the second show for me with this one, I think.
I honestly did pull it off of my desk here to bring down to your place, but I don't think there would have been any place to attach it, even though the clamp is fairly substantial in nature. It's kind of heavy.
Yeah.
I did not realize... I get, because it came in two pieces, it didn't feel that heavy to me, but when I tried to transport it, for some reason, it felt heavy.
Kind of like Thor's hammer. Like, it's not necessarily that it's heavy, but...
It's that it's unwieldy. It's a little too top heavy.
Well, I think if you try to move it, it will, like, resist with an equal force, you know? If you're not worthy, especially, I know that can be a problem.
Yeah,
I don't know. Are you worthy to wield this microphone? That could be something to look into.
The microphone, yes. What is it, Mjolnir?
I think
Mjolnir.
Yeah.
That one, no, I don't think I am.
I would. Yeah, most people aren't. So
yeah,
there's no great shame in that, I'd say. Although that was a super cool scene when Captain America picked up that hammer there in that Avengers Endgame.
Yeah, you definitely saw that one coming.
Yeah,
it's some point, but it still was badass when it happened.
Yeah, totally cool. That was a really good movie. I don't know if I mentioned that on this podcast, but if you haven't seen Avengers Endgame, go check it out. And I didn't really care for the one before that, Infinity Gauntlet. Maybe a controversial decision, but I feel like they, or opinion, but I feel like they really wrapped it up well.
I really like both parts, but I'm a little bit of a sucker. I don't argue with too much. I've started to hear more people creep in with their Marvel fatigue. And I'm like, you know what? They actually do a pretty decent job, for the most part, of spacing things apart. The beginning of last year was a little heavy, just because they did Captain Marvel, and then they went into Endgame after that.
Yeah. I feel like they're on a bit of a break here.
They had Spider-Man came out, but I don't think there's been anything since Spider-Man.
Yeah, strangely, maybe it's really not a break. It just feels like a break, since it's not like kind of the feverish pace of the leading up to the Infinity War cycle thing.
I do feel like they kind of picked things up a little bit, and it probably would not harm them to back off the schedule a little bit.
Yeah,
I know, like, people have kind of felt that way about Star Wars too, that there had been too many.
Yeah, I would argue that...
too many of those too quickly.
That's what Disney thought, at least, because they scaled back on those Star Wars story movies, which they were putting out, like, every other year, so that they would, like, have a Star Wars movie every year, basically. But they have kind of put the kibosh on those after Solo. And also that... I don't know if we did this... Well, I think we talked about it, the Galaxy's Edge at... Disney, the theme park where you could go, and it's like,
oh,
you know,
yeah,
Star Wars Land. They've been having trouble with attendance there, so it does seem that there's a few indicators pointing towards, as you say, Star Wars fatigue.
Yeah, I guess I'm pretty surprised, honestly, considering that people still go to Potter World,
right?
You know, and things of that nature. Like, that's the one thing that. It to me is like anti-fatigue. Like, nobody seems to have fatigue from anything. Like, I can't believe how much professional wrestling I watch right now. Honestly, like, there is a little bit
shocking to you.
Yeah, it's shocking even to me at this point. It honestly is. Like, there are a lot of, like, I haven't gotten to South Park yet. And I love South Park. Like, that is one of those shows that is... And even the ones that I have seen this season have been pretty damn funny, too. I mean, ever since Randy started owning a pot farm in Colorado, things have been pretty aces in that department.
Yeah, I haven't watched it in quite a few years. It sounds like I'd enjoy it, though. I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably just check it out sometime.
So I guess to kind of get back to a little bit of the fatigue point, it is kind of weird to me that they're not, that Disney, because I know that, I know that we talked about Galaxy's Edge. I'm not sure if we talked about the poor attendance.
Right.
But, yeah, I guess I'm just kind of surprised that people feel that way, just because people can. Like, people go to so many wrestling events now that it's kind of bonkers. And, like, I feel like there's a lot of events for whatever you're into. You just need to, like, know the information, honestly, at this point. Or just kind of be hip to where it is. And hell, half the time, all you need to do here in town is just go down to the convention center and figure out what the hell is going on there. You know, I mean, the Comic-Con happens down there, Beer Fest happens down there. You know, I mean, you can have a volleyball tournament happening in one part of the building and, like, furries in another part of the convention center, and
you may have it sometimes.
Yeah, you may have that sometimes.
Well, yeah.
So
we are lucky to live in an area where there's a lot going on, I guess. So, yeah. I mean, but I forget what we're talking about there, Kevin. Oh,
Star Wars fatigue. Yes, and exactly. Yeah, and all that other good stuff.
Well,
none of the topics that we'd planned for.
I would say maybe the Harry Potter thing is kind of because they're done with all the movies. And, like, people, like, if you still want, like, a Harry Potter experience, like... The books are all done.
The movies
are all done. It's like J.K. Rowling is pissing people off on Twitter.
Yeah.
There's you need to, like, go somewhere where you're, like, immersed in that world as kind of like a continuation of the experience you've already had.
Yeah, that is a good point.
They're still making movies. I don't know. It's like there's no... kind of like feeling of rarity for a Star Wars experience, I guess, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I do feel like they've had some small-scale Star Wars stuff. Because I feel like I was walking in a... is it an Imperial Trooper? Or something like that?
A Stormtrooper?
Or? No, what was the big walker?
The AT-AT?
AT-AT.
Yeah.
I feel like we did one of those, like, movie screen rides that they have. Have you seen those where, like, it looks super realistic and, like, the room moves with you to make you feel like you're in flight?
I went on a few of those at Universal Studios, yeah. There were some Harry Potter ones that we checked out. Ironically.
Yeah, so I feel like there was a Star Wars one, and, like, I guess that was one reason why that Star Wars park looks super awesome. Like, the detailing on it looks great. Because that's one of those things, too, that I kind of forget about, but people always mention about Star Wars how it actually looks like people live in Star Wars.
Yeah.
Like, because there's junk and stuff isn't, like, pristine all the time. Like, it might be pristine on the Death Star or something like that, but everywhere else there's just grime.
Yeah, which things look like they're used. It looks like it's an old world, like there's a history. I think that's definitely part of what made it, you know, catch on as it did.
Oh, yeah.
Kind of a feeling of, well, you know, like the world building, you know. It's the sort of thing that people... I think made people get into the Lord of the Rings with all the details and things that, you know, he put in there, and, like, the languages he invented. It kind of adds to the feeling that, you know, this is a real world you're reading about, I guess.
Well, right.
Or experiencing. It helps, it deepens the immersion, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So, yeah, we got a little bit off topic there, but that's, I think,
part of the course recently. Well, Ken, one of our favorite topics certainly is robots.
Oh.
I would have to say this one is kind of right up our alley. We have done a number of Boston Dynamics topics with their agility robot that they have that keeps on doing more and more crazy stuff.
Yeah, and they figure out ways to, like, be dicks towards the robot, it seems like, in more and more, in different ways on each video. But, you know, eventually they're going to start fighting back. It's only a matter of time. This will be, like,
The real robot uprising.
Yeah. The robots will, like, be showing each other the videos, you know, that the Boston Dynamics was, like, putting out there.
It's going to show them YouTube. Like,
you see this? This is what they used to do to us until we rose up and destroyed all humans. or not, but, you know, this, I guess, was a bit of a less scary kind of robot, Kevin, I would say.
Although,
it is potential to be scary.
Oh, no, there was plenty of potential scariness with this robot.
Yeah.
Maybe not in the looks department, but certainly in the surveillance problem department, because they created a pigeon bird.
Pigeon bot, even.
Pigeon bot. Why did I say bird?
Half pigeon.
There's
half
already
bird.
A bird that's a fucking pigeon.
We will create a hybrid pigeon bird. Speaking of South Park, that reminds me of the.
Wow, man, bear pig?
Going back, well, I was thinking first season with the half elephant, half pig. Was that. The one where it was kind of like the Island of Dr. Moreau. Do you remember that one?
Oh, yes. That was before Man, Bear, Pig.
Yeah. That I can remember there was like a first season South Park marathon back when we were in college. And like I recorded it on VHS. And that was like the coolest thing in the world. I remember showing like my roommates South Park for the first time. Then, for some stupid reason, I let somebody borrow it, and it was never returned, Kevin. Can you believe that?
Wow, I am shocked.
Yeah.
Shocked and surprised over here.
And before the days of streaming, really, there was no way to easily watch those back. Yes. That was unfortunate.
Oh, man.
Anyway, another diversion. We're on par for the course. So, pigeon bird, Kevin. Should we talk more?
Pigeon bot.
Pigeon bot, yeah. Yes.
Yeah, me screwing up led to your diatribe, which I somewhat appreciate.
it's actually half robot, half pigeon is what we're talking about here.
Yeah, and I guess I thought it was pretty interesting how they kind of, they did... I guess it's kind of interesting that we're still learning stuff about the flight mechanisms for birds. And I don't know how... I would assume that they had to test them dead, correct?
Yeah, I remember in the article they had said that they were looking at the wings of the dead birds and seeing how they were controlled. And they were. It was a little weird to hear them talking about the pigeon's fingers... But anatomically, I guess the wings are really just like elongated, you know, hands and arms. So like the fingers are like the bones that make up their, wings.
Yeah. They're like at the end of, they're at the end of the wing. Like they kind of have something similar to fingers.
So they're able to like, you know, move those fingers around, which will change the shape of the wing. And, they're able to, through studying, see how they're changing their shape in order to fly under different conditions. And the goal of this is to design a robot that can use similar kind of controls to change the shape of the wing in flight.
This one was like not flapping, but just to be able to like basically glide.
That was the interesting thing, is that they said that the birds don't really flap their wings that much, or at least pigeons don't flap their wings that much, and that it is more of a glide system that they're on.
And I think, well, the flapping part would seem to be the harder part to me to like pull off making a robot to be able to do that, because that seems like a lot of very small like adjustments and some force obviously to be able to like lift off the ground initially,
right?
But then once you're gliding, it would seem like small, you know, movements of the wing using those kind of tendon like controls would be an easier way to kind of like stay afloat rather than first taking off. So I think maybe a combination of things was why they were just doing like the gliding study here. But they were able to have more success, I think, than people would have believed. It's kind of been the dream, I would say, of people to be able to fly like a bird for a long time. But, you know, obviously the planes that we have now technically have wings, but they're nothing like a bird's wing. So this is like the first kind of actual success in creating something that is like a bird's wing to fly.
Yeah. There are definitely different mechanics. It's similar but different. Because it was pretty interesting, too, that they mentioned that the feathers themselves don't really spread apart. There's kind of like a ligament-type situation going on there where they can't spread. For the most part, they can't spread so far. They can only spread so far apart.
Oh, they were also saying how, like, the feathers themselves will actually, like, there could be little hooks on the end that will, like, lock the feathers together. there's different little spines coming out of each feather that will lock with the next feather, so they can make like a very, resistant to wind. Like the wind won't get through the feathers, basically, to let them have a solid surface to glide on. Feathers are pretty cool in general.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty bonkers. And I guess I always did think, kind of going back to the hand things, like, they always mentioned that birds are descended from dinosaurs. And I guess I always think about pterodactyls having their hands at the end of the end of their wings. So I guess I don't think it's that weird of a thought in some ways, but I mean, obviously birds don't have hands.
Are you thinking of, like, a cartoon pterodactyl that would, like...
Oh, do pterodactyls not have hands?
I'm pretty sure they don't have hands, but maybe I'm wrong. When you said that, I had a vision in my mind of a pterodactyl with hands. But I think it was a cartoon pterodactyl, which is why I asked. It's a common trope, I think, to have a pterodactyl with hands at the end. And let's see, consulting Google Images here. Might need to enhance some of these photographs. Well, artist conceptions.
Yeah.
There was a plush toy that looked like it had hands.
Well, yeah, I mean, the plush toy is the most convincing thing. I would go with most of them are showing hands, sir. The artist rendition.
Yeah, there's something that looks
but
like
that,
a hand there.
I'll tell you what, though, that kind of looks more like a bat wing than what I would think of bird-wise. Because bird-wise, I would think it's down at the tip of the wing instead of their hands look to be at the mid-wing point. Which is, to me, you know, it's a slight design variation, in my opinion.
It's almost like their little pinky finger became the wingtip, and, like, the other fingers are still, like, kind of sticking up from, like, where an arm would be normally.
Oh.
And, like, the pinky became super extended.
Yeah, you could. It could be that way.
I'm gonna say that that's 100% what happened.
Yeah, I don't know why they didn't pop up any images of a pterodactyl. Is there a skeleton?
There should be somewhere, right?
Yeah. It had hands. Hands.
Well, I'll be damned. I guess maybe that cartoon pterodactyl I was thinking of was more accurate than I had thought at first. My apologies.
I had no idea that I was going to be right in the end, but I'm going to go with it.
Well, you should enjoy your victory.
I will.
It's well earned, yes.
But yeah, I mean, okay, so, but they're supposed to be feathered too, though. So, I mean, I guess it'd be kind of interesting. It's obviously going to be impossible to study whether pterodactyls had such a mechanism or if that's something that has evolved over time to suit pigeons in particular. But I would imagine that that's fairly common among the bird species as a whole.
Bird relatives, yes. I think that that makes sense, Kevin. I don't know. I think it's cool. I wish that... I kind of wish that our planes had, like, bird wings instead of normal straight wings, Kevin. I think that's kind of boring. And one of my favorite toys growing up was a little thing that you had a rubber band in it that you wound up, and the wings would flap when you let it go, and it would actually fly.
No.
Now, those wings didn't change shape, so that was, again, a bit of a simplified version of a bird flight, but it was still pretty cool. So the idea to me of, like, being able to actually have a robot bird that could, like, take off, it sounds pretty neat.
So you want, like, that mechanical owl from...
That would be amazing.
What is that?
Clash of the Titans.
Clash of the Titans.
Yeah. We watched that... a family movie night, and it was pretty popular with everybody. I was surprised. Oh.
I'll tell you, they made fun of that it was a Seth Rogen. Is it a Seth Rogen movie? It was a James Franco movie. And I'm trying to think of because it was a comedy. Oh, he did it with Danny McBride. Ever After, I believe, but they had a mechanical owl in that too, which made me laugh.
It was kind of a send up of that one.
Yeah, I mean, they were clearly borrowing from.
I think the special effects are still, like, charming in that movie, just because they were, like, all the old kind of, like, stop animation.
Yeah, I did find myself somewhat recently wrapped up in the original one. And I don't remember exactly when that was.
And everything is, like, pretty goofy, but, like, it's you've got these, like, people giving, like, these dramatic line readings. And, I mean, Sir Laurence Olivier's in it. Speaking of Harry Potter, Professor McGonagall is in it. A young...
Wow.
Yes.
I guess I don't... Like, that's one of those ones that I don't know what she's been in before that or after that.
She was...
She is strictly Professor McGonagall in my estimation.
Oh, okay. Well, she was also in Harry Potter. What am I saying?
Yeah,
she was in Harry Potter, but she was also in Downton Abbey, I meant to say.
Okay.
Old lady in that one. Yeah, she's had a good career lately of being, you know, sassy older lady characters, and it's done well for her. But yeah, she was a bit of a sassy woman in this one. She was the mother of the guy who got cursed and turned into a monster. She was one of the gods. And, I think the reason that my daughter was into it is because she had been reading the Percy Jackson novels, which I was not familiar with.
Oh.
But...
yeah, those were... My niece, my one niece read through all those.
which take on, I guess, the story, like a modern version of Perseus.
Oh.
Which I didn't get at first, but he was like Zeus's son. So it was kind of like that story from Clash of the Titans.
Yeah, I did not get that I did not get that parallel. It's kind of right there.
That's what I thought too. I was like, which he was
that,
like,
that is not a deep one. Like, oh man, they were going for a deep cut on this. Like, they really tricked us. No, like it's like basically beating you over the head.
Yeah, I kind of felt like, why didn't I get that before? But, you know, to the credit, they did a good job of, you know, disguising it a little bit somehow. Even the disguising it in plain sight, maybe, is I would describe it.
That is a good description.
But, yeah, she was definitely into the whole story, and I think was familiar with some of it. You know, the Medusa part.
Oh, okay.
The, you know, Pegasus, flying horse.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
Yeah. Some good stuff.
That's when special effects were real special effects, Ken.
Yeah, before all this computer-generated crap. No, I kid. It's fine. I do think I like those special effects. Even though they weren't good, like, they still held up today, I feel like. If you try to look at, like, some special effects, like, even Lord of the Rings special effects, like, if you go back and watch, like, The Fellowship of the Ring, like,
oh,
those special effects don't all hold up the same way that they did 20 years ago? Is that possible?
Yeah, it's it's probably been longer than I want to know.
Yeah, but just throwing out a little recommendation, if you haven't watched it in a while, the original Clash of the Titans, it's
yeah, 2001, so it's we're creeping up on 20 years.
Close to 19 here, yeah.
From the original Lord of the Rings coming out in the theater, which means that they were probably using 20-year-old technology when they were actually filming.
Well, yeah, that's true. But they, I think, were... That movie at the time was innovative in what they were doing, so they were, at the time, cutting edge, which helps them out a little bit. It wasn't like...
Yeah, and they developed as the movies went along since they... Because I believe that they filmed all the movies at the same time, if I'm not mistaken. Or am I
No, you're right. But
yeah, and then they did, but they did post production afterwards. So I do feel like as the movies went along, that it probably gets better along the way, just because technology was getting better.
Yeah, they weren't. I remember they didn't show Gollum in the first one because they were not, I think, ready to unveil that technology there, which I believe still does hold up. Like the Gollum at the time, I think we might forget, but it was a bit of a sensation having you know, that Gollum creature be like totally computer generated and look actually
like realistic. Fit in.
Yeah, that I think that still works when on my most recent viewing. So that was still an accomplishment.
Oh man!
So yeah, somehow we still got talking about Lord of the Rings, Kevin, multiple times this episode
from a pigeon bot.
Yes,
because I started making cracks about the flying mechanical owl.
Well, I wanted to also make a further comparison. You know, of course, the Dark Lord Sauron had birds as his spies, Kevin.
That
could be a potential misuse, you know, for this kind of technology.
That was they were talking about using them as surveillance. And I would imagine that at some point we will have a bird that looks like a bird that is surveillance. And that's kind of creepy.
Yeah, there is something a little creepy about that. Like, I remember reading that, you know, book and being creeped out by thinking that there could be, you know, a flock of birds out there looking for you, you know, flying high in the sky. Maybe you wouldn't even know they were there. Or it could just be mixed in and be, you know, with other birds potentially even.
Oh, right. You know, they could come out and fly through our, I mean, they're all kind of, well, blue jays love flying through our bushes for whatever reason.
Interesting.
You know, they could disguise one as a blue jay and I'd never know it.
Yeah.
Keep an eye on
it. Probably shouldn't put this out there, Kevin. I mean, if you have enemies who are listening that are looking into developing this Blue Jay robot technology, we don't need to give them any ideas.
Yes, these NPR people are definitely going to come after me now that I've revealed their sources about pigeon robot armies.
Yeah, you're too close to the truth here.
The truth is out there, Ken. The truth is out there.
I can't even do the song. I don't even know what it is.
No, I'd be terrible at the song. So I'm not even going to attempt it.
That's probably a good move.
Oh, well, Ken, one thing that I have attempted twice is marriage.
Yeah, and the second one is still going strong here, so that's good.
Yeah, we are getting to the point where it's a year count higher than the previous relationship.
Hey.
So
I don't think I realized that, but that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I believe as of April, it would be a longer time together. That's not to mean anniversary, but yeah, time together.
Total time spent.
Yeah, total time spent, TTS. I believe. Yeah. And I do feel like there has been, you know, better communication this time around.
Yeah, that's probably going to be a good thing, I would say, Kevin.
Yeah, I know that everyone comes here for their wedding counseling.
Relationship advice in general, yeah.
Yeah, relationship, exactly.
I don't know. You know what? We have a stealth. I think if you went back and looked, there's a few times we've had relationship topics on here. Like, I don't know.
Oh.
You know, we're not necessarily one-note show here.
We're not just robots. This
is not a one-trick pony you're dealing with.
Yeah, we have about six or seven tricks. Yeah,
we've got six or seven tricks.
Heists.
Don't worry.
The heist trick.
Robots, I mean.
Robots.
Yeah, that's true. Yep, heist. What else we got? Stupid people?
Yes, yeah, stupid people. Steelers is definitely... and now
I thought you were still talking about the heist there, Kevin, when you were saying Steelers, and then I...
Oh, but
generally, anything that we like, really.
Yeah, which is pretty a pretty broad topic.
Oh, Lord of the Rings, for sure.
Yeah. What? Have we mentioned them this episode yet?
Only four times, I think.
But anywho, to get back to yet again the topic at hand.
Yeah,
here.
This was an interesting article, and
yeah,
had to do with the study of you know, specifically why relationships break apart and kind of why people don't stay together. And you know, there's good reasons to not stay together.
Yes, yes, there are very good reasons. One person not loving the other person, very good reason.
Yes.
To get divorced.
That was a good reason to not be married.
Yeah.
You want to...
yeah, it's got to be a two-way street.
Yes. But there's also relationships that kind of fall apart without really needing to. And...
yeah, I was not surprised that the article let off talking about a negativity bias.
That was, I think, something that probably a lot of people are familiar with. The idea that we're fixating more on the negatives when somebody, say, gives us a compliment and a criticism, we're going to be focused on the criticism and really kind of forgetting about the compliment. And it's, you know, evolutionary reasons. We want to be hyper-focused on threats versus, you know, things that are, you know, nice that we don't have to worry about, really. But when there's a threat or a danger of some kind, and I think people react that way to negative, you know, feelings in a relationship, it leads to a to like a hyper focus on it. So the article basically, in a nutshell, I guess, is saying that they find that when the levels of negativity reach a certain point in a relationship, that kind of tips over and spells doom for the relationship.
Yeah, and it didn't seem like it didn't matter what type, how the negativity was brought about.
Yeah.
It was just that it was present. Like, and they kind of named like different forms that it can take in the article. You know, how the negativity can play out.
Oh, you know what? I should look that one up because I did. I thought that was a nice listing of negative kind of responses. Really.
Yeah, let it slide and hope things improve. Oh, yeah. Okay, this was the question. You're dating someone who does something that annoys you. Perhaps your partner is a spendthrift or flirts with your friends or zones out in the middle of your stories. How do you respond? Let it slide and hope things improve. Explain what bothers you and work out a compromise. Sulk, say nothing, but emotionally withdraw from your partner and head for the exit.
Yeah.
I do think that 4 is, you know, if you're trying to give it time, 4 is an option for later down the road. Mm-hmm. You know, if you do number 2, and I'm not talking about the poo.
This is not that kind of show. Come on.
You know, if you explain why it bothers you, and try to work out a compromise. That, to me, is the best solution on the board there, in my my estimation.
Yeah, but I would say, according to the study that they've done, even, like, saying nothing and hoping it improves is kind of, you know, if you're just looking to extend the relationship.
Hey, you are avoiding negativity.
Yes.
By being silent.
Although, I agree. It's, you would hope that you would want to try to make it better. So, that is a bad outcome of not doing anything. Because if you don't change anything, it's probably not going to change, right? That makes sense.
Oh, yeah. And only, well... Yeah, and change is definitely a one-way street. It's either happening or it ain't.
Oh, further on in the article, they talked about a study that they did to kind of look at the negative behaviors in a relationship. And it sounded... I think I would like to be one of the people who had to take the notes here. It was like each time one of the partners did something negative... complaining, speaking in a hostile tone, rolling their eyes, denying responsibility, insulting the other, the action was classified and counted. Now, doesn't that sound kind of fun, you know, just to kind of like watch people fighting and like making notes?
Well, and I did forget that sometimes these devious researchers, too, they were talking about it later in the article, how they intentionally made one person, they made partners sit back to back.
Oh, right.
And
this was devious.
Yeah, they had one person basically write nothing.
Well, it was a question that said, write down what you don't like about your partner, I think, right?
And so, even if it's just one thing.
So people would like write down a thing or two and that's it. And then the other person would be scribbling and scribbling away. And because they were given a different question, which was like, list everything you own in your house. It was like, you have to list at least 25 things. So like they're writing and writing. And the person who is listening to all that writing starts to think, hey, wait a minute, they're like listing all these things bad about me. And they found that the people who kind of reacted negatively the most, I guess, in that kind of situation like the people who they, I guess they theorized were fearful of rejection, tended to be the people who ended up like pushing away their partners the most, and those were the relationships that were most likely to end up breaking up. And it's ironic, Kevin, don't you think, that, you know, our fear of rejection can lead us to push other people away? Isn't that strange? But, yeah, apparently that happened.
Yeah, I guess it's another one where I'm not... Because I feel like fear of rejection just causes a lot of problems in general.
Mm-hmm.
I do feel like I... there was a time that I would complain about the women of Ohio and the women of Pennsylvania, and that I had no luck with the women of Ohio. I still submit that since my wife was born in California, she is not a woman of Ohio.
But she's been here for a long time, I think.
Yeah, majority of her life.
Yes.
A vast majority of her life. But she also maybe has parents from a sensible area of Pennsylvania, too.
Sorry, Kevin. I was just going to say, maybe it's because you've become a man of Ohio, having lived here for such a long time. It kind of eventually, you know, canceled out or something.
I am going to... say that I am not going to go with your beliefs, and go with my own formulation of things.
Fair enough.
But that had something to do with the relationships and what exactly we were talking about there. Fear of rejection. That's one of those things that. I feel like at least part of it was on me. Like, I don't know if I didn't have a fear of rejection in Altoona or if things just for whatever reason were easier. But I do feel like there were chances that I could have asked people out that I did not take the chance because of the fear of rejection.
Mm-hmm.
So there is definitely... I do feel like there's something in the water, but... there were some times I should have at least given it the old college try, and maybe things would have turned out.
Yeah.
Maybe they wouldn't have. But, you know, whatever. Like, that's kind of part of the game.
Well, you don't get any of the chances you don't take, I think, Kevin. That's for sure.
Yeah, that's what the kids like to say.
But, yeah, the article was interesting to me just because of the... They said that it's... The negativity then also is contagious. So, like...
Oh.
At some point, it does get to the other person to the point where they then become negative and start responding negatively and rolling their eyes, denying responsibility, et cetera, et cetera. To get those little check marks on the researcher's clipboard.
Yeah. Yeah, I will tell you that even now, I would admit that there are times where it's just like, this one's lasted a little too long, and I don't know if I can resist the temptation.
This this wedding? Or this marriage?
No, not the marriage.
Okay, I just wanted I didn't think that was it.
No,
I thought we needed to clear that up.
Just some extended time. I am a fairly laid back person pretty much all the time, but there are times where she can get a little negative, and I do think that there are times where that negativity lasts too long and my general positive outlook diminishes. Mm-hmm. And it does end up causing problems. We then end up resolving them.
Yes.
You know, so, I mean, I get, I'm not really concerned on that front. And that's a whole big difference from the first go-round, too. You know, and I guess I wasn't really surprised, because this, again, another thing in the article was they kind of mentioned how they pretty much said that you're never going to get back like that crazy like spark that you felt when you first got together with someone, and that it's kind of the people that figure out different things to kind of please each other that are the ones that end up staying together and having longer relationships.
Yeah.
I guess even at this point is pretty clear to me. And I guess... well, and I don't want to tangent to that point quite yet, at least. But...
tangent denied.
Well, and maybe it is really part of it, is that the article also mentioned that it's better to marry later in life because you're less likely to get divorced. And but, I mean, I do feel like I'm definitely in a different spot now, or even when I got together with the current wife, that I was in a different spot just in my life than I had been when I first got together with my ex-wife. And I guess I do always think that there's something at least to that part where, you know, I guess in some ways I think it's natural to do that. It's not to say that I sought out to have a couple of wives, because I was pretty unhappy about the situation, considering that I was the first one in the family to come down on this side of things.
Well, that can be, you know, I think it's good that you were able to overcome that a little bit and just go through with it, because it's, you know, like we said, there's some relationships that should come to an end, I think. And
yeah, that one was on the list. I don't know how long the list is. I'm sure there are others on the list.
Right.
And you can judge whether those persons involved can judge for themselves. But yeah, me personally, that one definitely needed to be halted. And I wasn't the one that was going to do it. So it's probably best that her mother did it for us.
I think the last thing I pulled out of the article I wanted to hit here was the study picked up that this is really more of a problem in heterosexual relationships, and in same-sex relationships it's not as much of a problem, because the men are less likely to initiate complaints, and the women are less likely to like emotionally withdraw when complaints are made.
I feel like they did mention that they had their own set of problems, though, that stemmed from I didn't feel like it was all peachy keen for the same sex couples.
Well, probably not, but I guess in that way at least they don't have the same problems. So maybe that's you know, another argument against the people who would say that it's somehow unnatural to you know, have same-sex relationships. It's actually in some ways more compatible.
Yeah, I mean, there are some people in opposite sex union that are using toothpaste.
Oh my god. Whoa, this was... Yeah, all right. We're doing this.
In their relationship. Sometimes for lubricants.
In their relationships with themselves or, you know, other people.
Yeah.
Personal intimate use. Relationships, yes.
Yes.
I don't know where people got the idea that this was a... I mean, I understand, you know... I guess we've all been there, where you're desperate, and...
I understand the attraction of lubricant
yes.
being used. I understand the, you know, the pleasure that can bring about. I don't understand why it would ever cross one's mind to use toothpaste.
Mm-mm.
To, like, on the list of liquids that I would think about using, toothpaste is just simply from the peppermint.
That's part. I didn't even think about that, Kevin. But that's a good point.
Like that. Like
that's kind of tingly. You know, fresh feeling. You don't really want that on your down below. I would say.
But no, that's just
a real sensitive area in general.
Yeah, I don't need the icy hot in my balls. No. Like that's basically what you're doing, icy hotting your balls. Like why?
The infamous
or your shaft.
Ben Gay in your underpants, you know, prank.
Gag.
Yes. That's you're basically doing that to yourself. So yeah, that's step one as to why it's a bad idea. There's also abrasives in toothpaste. You know.
Oh.
That's they are like you know
yeah there's good
at like polishing your teeth
yeah there is a purposeful grit in toothpaste to help help clean your teeth
yeah anything that you know you can describe with the word grit you just want to keep away from your
from your privates
yes
yeah I do not think Manscaped would approve of using toothpaste.
I would hope not. I mean, you would have to be into some weird stuff to approve of using toothpaste, I guess. Some people are in, you know, masochist, I guess. But I still think you could find a healthier way to do it.
Yeah, the one guy at the end of the article mentioned that there was scabbing up in his...
Yeah.
That's why I just do not feel the need to go to Reddit. Like when people bring up what is posted on Reddit, I'm sure that there is a bunch of benign stuff there. There's probably way more benign than there is this craziness.
No, there's not much benign stuff. I mean, there's some interesting things on there. Somehow I was like looking at a relationship forum, and like there's stuff that people post in there. That you would think is probably not true, but I don't know. It makes you wonder. And I can't remember anything specifically right now, but yeah, that is a... there's some interesting stuff on there. I guess that's why people go there. For interesting stories.
Yeah, I mean, we find our own wacky, wild stories, and this was definitely one of them. I saw this, and I'm like... Oh boy, that is definitely an OPA story.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of better choices. Even soap, although I don't think that's probably a good choice.
No, I would think that'd dry up at some point.
Yeah, yeah. Of course, hand lotion's probably the classic go-to if you're in a bind.
Yeah, I mean, I don't get it. Go dry. Go dry, guys. Like, that's my advice from me to you. If your choice is between toothpaste and going dry.
Oh, for God's sakes, please, go dry.
Please, just.
And I did like the people dry. Who went to the internet to kind of. You know, be the voice of reason and warn other people not to do this. They're like, learn from my mistakes. It's like the ghost of Christmas past visiting Scrooge. Like, don't do like I did.
Oh. Well, I like that they had to have someone that thought that it was necessary to bring a doctor into the equation. To have to tell people that this was bad. And it's just like, oh my God, why do we need a doctor involved in this?
Yeah, we shouldn't have to. Although, I guess they wanted to cover their bases. You know, it's probably good form to bring in a medical expert, but I think we all knew what they were going to say. Don't use toothpaste.
Yeah, everyone except for the people that put toothpaste on there. Well, because, I mean, they mentioned it in the vagina, too, in the article. I'm just like, oh, what, like, okay, like, I feel like that's one of those things where I'm biased against guys, where I'm like, oh, I can definitely see a guy being dumb enough to do this. Like, for a woman, I'm like, isn't she smart enough to
sometimes to say no? That there are dumb women out there, Kevin. You know, it's not.
it is not a one sex.
Yeah.
Problem.
I've heard people say before that, like, intelligence. And this is, could be completely bullshit, but the theory was that intelligence is more like uniform in women. So like they have like a kind of a smaller range. Like there's less like super dumb women and less like super smart women, according to this theory.
Oh, okay.
And that men, you have a greater variation. I don't know if that's true or not, but that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know how you'd even study that. You know what I mean? Like, people can't agree on what smart is half the time.
Mm-hmm. And it's definitely a loaded term that, you know, people can define, you know, being smart to mean knowing what they know.
Are you book smart or are you street smart?
And, of course, the real answer is, you know, knowing Tolkien lore in minutia makes you a smart person.
Yeah, that is definitely book smart. That's my definition.
Yeah. Oh, I guess I should point out, you know, maybe mention, I saw that last week Christopher Tolkien passed away. J.R.R.'s son and the publisher of most of his books, really. After he died, he put out the Silmarillion and, like, a ton of books on, like, kind of cataloging all of his father's writing and notes and stuff. So, I think something that we probably should mention on the show.
Yeah, that's one that one of my friends posted on Facebook, and I was like, oh, I should bring that up as a topic. Yeah. And that's one where it's just like hard to be too bummed when I saw that he was 95.
Oh yeah.
And I'm like, oh my lord, that guy lived
He was too young, Kevin.
Yeah.
Aragorn lived to be 200, so I mean, he was cut down in his prime, I think.
Yeah, heck, if we wanted to, we could mention our teaser article, which is one in which there is an elixir of life now supposedly on the market. We can put that out there as a teaser for the OPA audience.
Yeah, we're going to be talking about life-extending studies if you guys want to get out there and maybe find the do a little research so you're read up for when the next episode drops. But
yeah, so that we can start living as long as Moses did, like, in the Bible.
Unfortunately, that came a little early for, or a little too late, rather, for Christopher Tolkien.
Yes.
But, you know, he was a bit, you know, obviously his father is more famous, but he had done a lot to kind of continue his father's work, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, because there's just there's a lot of information that we still haven't even really gotten to that he helped catalog.
And he definitely published more books than his father, you know, in the Lord of the Rings, world than his father did. You know, don't know if everybody's aware of that or not, but that's something I think, like I said, just wanted to get out there, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think we had brought up Lord of the Rings yet this episode.
No,
so
we
really needed to close out the episode with the, you know, our first Lord of the Rings reference.
Yeah,
show.
Need to make sure to get it in there at some point. You know, each episode, I feel like. So I'm glad we were able to do that.
Oh, well.
Be careful, you know, eagle-eared listeners will be able. Eagle-eared? Is that? I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, you could go with that. Why not?
Bat-eared? What has good hearing?
Bats have good hearing. Dogs have good hearing.
All right, dog-eared. Well, no, dog-eared sounds like it's kind of all torn apart and bad, rumpled looking. So, yeah, bad-eared.
You're
going to
get bad-eared? Yeah. Okay. That's fine.
Bad-eared listeners.
Well, you do not need to be a bat-eared listener to know that we always talk about the Belltime Beer of the Week. We actually shared one this week, which has not been a case. I feel like it's a little bit harder to get 22s People have moved a lot to canning instead of bottling, and I feel like that has led to a reduction in 22s.
Yeah, there's a place in where my old neighborhood, Old Town East, now, I don't know, I think you've been there, that beer garden kind of place, where they have huge cans there, which I believe are 20 ounces.
Oh, well, they have growlers are quite popular now.
Oh, okay.
Which are the can growlers.
That's what it was then.
And there's a 32-ounce version and a 64-ounce if you want to really go big mamma jamma.
Woo-wee. Yeah, I'm not sure which one this was, but it was definitely the biggest can I'd ever seen. Bigger than a Foster's can.
Yeah, even those 32-ounce cans are pretty honking big.
Mm-hmm.
But to get back to this beer at hand.
Yes.
The wife and I went out to Bison Day at Homestead Brewing out in Heath, Ohio. It is a... I would have to say it is on that top echelon of breweries in the area. They make a lot of fantastic beers. I had the Bourbon Barrel Bison when I was there. I also had the Tannenbaum Christmas Ale.
Mm.
What I did not have was what was in this, what started the conversation, 22. Royal Tannenbaum, which is a mix of the Bourbon Barrel Buffalo, or Bison, and the Tannenbaum Christmas Ale. It comes in a nice hefty 10.5% alcohol.
Yeah.
So it's probably best to split this beer anyway.
Yeah. I quite enjoyed the taste of it. And if you had told me it was just a standard beer, I would have been quite happy to have had it. It is a nice blend. It's, like you say, it's not something you're going to be slamming down, hopefully.
Yeah, if you're slamming down this heavy of a beer, you have got to... Well, actually, I was ready to slam this down because when we started the show, it was just in my hand and I hadn't put it on the floor. And I was ready to rip through this thing. Like, I really... Like, I think I might like it better than either of the beers separately.
Well, that mirrors my experience. I thought it was quite delicious. And, you know... I probably could have drank more than I needed to of that one, given the high alcohol percentage. But, you know, I don't know if this is like you said, a special occasion kind of.
Yeah, I we might be able to find some up at Crafted Drafts up on Hamilton here.
Okay.
But this is one that for the vast majority of the listening audience, it will be tough to get a hold of. But I'm telling you, you ever come into town, there is always a tour available with yours truly. And, yeah, I mean, honestly...
Is that for our Patreon subscribers, Kevin? Or?
Yeah, that is for our Patreon subscribers.
On our non-existent Patreon page.
Because we have more time to fit in more material, right?
Sure, sure. We can start giving out tours.
I mean, I am here for beer tours. I would be more than happy to give one for the cost of a beer.
Now that's a deal.
And like I said, Homestead would certainly be on the short list for visits. Like, I know that our one mutual friend, Steve, in Altoona, he has not gone to Homestead. The next time they come out here, I definitely think that I should put that one on the list. It's a little bit of a drive to get out there, but I do think that it is it's worth the drive. And you know, they do sell to a lot of local restaurants and whatnot, so that helps. Their distribution deal seems pretty decent.
Well, I haven't been out to that brewery yet, but I might have to give it a try sometime.
Yeah, I guess with that, at DeFrango 11, at Gozer 33, the brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you happen to listen to us. And have a good night.
We'll see ya.